Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, where each week we delve into little-known healthcare and hospital hazards, as well as other fringe topics that affect your health and well-being. I'm so happy you've taken the time to join me, and today I have lots to share with you. So, let's dig right in, shall we? Welcome to perhaps the most important time of your week, the time to stop and think about the many ways you can protect your health, not only during every healthcare or hospital encounter, but also throughout each moment of your life. I know how easy it is to get caught up in daily life and ignore the multitude of injustices that bombard us. But for just a moment, I really must discuss one of them. And I've addressed this before and had a guest or two talk about it in the past, but it's really bothering me because of the obviousness of it, if that's a word. And I'm talking about chemtrails. Chemtrails. You know, the long white lines that crisscross the sky on a daily basis? What most people believe, because we are led to believe, are merely vapor trails left behind commercial airlines. They are not vapor trails. They are chemicals. Aluminum, barium, strontium, and who knows what other nanoparticles, sprayed in the air to provide an easy and inexpensive way to avert global warming. Ah, global warming. A political myth? A lie? Promoted to achieve a political agenda? Yes, it's a dark topic, isn't it? The amount of barium in our atmosphere exceeds by 8 times the level deemed safe for humans to breathe. And smaller animals are simply out of luck. Save the planet from the dangers of global warming by slowly killing the inhabitants? But I guess less inhabitants? Less of you and me? Why, then we wouldn't have a global warming problem then, would we? If you're interested, look up and read a couple of previously classified government documents, now declassified, that talk about population control. One is called National Security Memorandum 200, and the other is Kissinger Letter to the President, Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for the U.S. Security and Overseas Interests. Or just visit the website globalskywatch.com. But now it seems like I'm getting ahead of myself, as usual. Always so excited to get going, I almost forgot to tell you that we are in the midst, apparently, of the healthcare hazard of the week. Well, you might remember an interview I aired for you several months ago, Russ Tanner from GlobalSkyWatch.com. He's been exposing chemtrails for years now, and on his website, he's added this bit of information that I really must share with you. He has all along debunked the myth that these were vapor trails, but recently he added this to his website. Since the writing of my series of articles exposing chemtrails, multiple professional airline pilots have contacted me and thanked me for my stance against this deception. All of them told me personally that they have never seen trails come out of jet engines, and that they appreciate my work exposing the disinformation. Every one of these pilots knew that contrails are so rare that most people will never see one in their lifetime. And if they do occur, they are at high altitudes that cannot be seen from the ground. Each of these professional pilots have flown most of their lives and have always had a deep interest in aviation. Some of them fly mainstream commercial jets, while others fly large jets for major parcel carriers. And I say, just call your local airport and ask about commercial flight patterns. I know that I don't live under an airport flight pattern. So why then do I see sometimes 30 planes in an afternoon leaving white plumes above me? because they are not commercial planes and those are not vapor trails. Now, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I challenge you to look up. Put down the cell phone and look up. Today, tomorrow, the next day, the next, the following week, look up at the sky. You'll be shocked at what you see. Do you remember the days of deep, intense blue skies? No longer. You may see that for a few minutes in the early morning, but soon, if you watch, you'll see the planes flying back and forth, sometimes six or seven, one after another, crisscrossing each other, leaving white lines in the sky that soon turn the beautiful clear sky of days gone by into an ugly haze. No depth, just a light fuzzy blue cluttered by what you think are clouds, but rather are the man-made remains of sprayed chemicals. I've also noticed and researched that because more people are beginning to take notice, the powers that be are now flying at higher altitudes and leaving shorter trails that soon dissipate and disappear. Out of sight and out of mind. These high-altitude chemtrails are no less evil and dangerous. In fact, more so, in that fewer people will notice. Oh, and for the real shocker, there is actually a law that makes all of this legal. So hang on to your hats. The U.S. law allows testing of chemicals and biological agents on civilian population. And by the way, you can find this at Russ Tanner's website, globalskywatch.com. And I'm going to quote here. Public law 105-85, November 18th, 1997. Use of human subjects for testing of chemical or biological agents. Section 1078. Restrictions on the use of human subjects for testing of chemical or biological agents. And now subsection A says prohibited activities. The Secretary of Defense may not conduct directly or by contract any test or experiment involving the use of chemical agents or biological agents on a civilian population or any other testing of a chemical agent or biological agent on human subjects. So, okay, this sounds good, right? It prohibits chemical and biological tests on humans. Oh, but as with any rule, now we have the exceptions. Here are the exceptions. The prohibition does not apply to a test or an experiment carried out for any of the following purposes. For any peaceful purpose that is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. So basically, the prohibition does not apply to tests carried out for virtually any purpose. So that completely negates the prohibitions that state that they cannot test or experiment involving the use of chemical agents or biological agents on a civilian population. In other words, the United States government can test chemicals and biological agents on humans for nearly any purpose they desire. And then they go further to define the term biological agent. And I quote, a biological agent defined in this section, the term biological agent means any microorganism, including bacteria, viruses, fungus, or protozoa, pathogen or infectious substance, and any naturally occurring bioengineered or synthesized component of any such microorganisms, pathogen, or infectious substance, whatever its origin or method of production that is capable of causing death, disease, or other biological malfunction in a human, an animal, a plant, or any other living organism, deterioration of food, water, equipment, supplies, or materials of any kind, or that is deleterious alteration of the environment. In other words, the United States government can test chemicals and biological agents on humans that cause death, biological malfunction, and deleterious alteration of the environment. Does the term deleterious alteration of the environment bring chemtrails to mind? Now, some argue that none of this activity can be conducted without informed consent. And that is stated in another section C, which reads, and I quote, informed consent required. The Secretary of Defense may conduct a test or experiment described in the above sections only if informed consent to the testing was obtained from each human subject in advance of the testing on that subject. Well, that seems to provide some protection for us in that it requires us to be notified in advance if this testing is to take place. In reality, it does not provide any protection at all. Why not? Well, because you've already been informed in advance and you've already given your consent. Because this law is publicly available to you and everyone else to read, you have been informed. And because you have not contested it in court, you have provided your consent. So when this law was published, you were informed. And because you have not challenged it in court, you have consented. By doing nothing, you and I have said, sure, go ahead and poison me. Even if it causes death, I have no problem with it. Because this contract meets the judicial requirements of remedy and recourse, it is legally binding. Judges like to say, ignorance of the law is no excuse. They say this because, of course, you and I are expected to know all of the laws because it is publicly available for us to read, despite the fact that it is not humanly possible. So in reality, this section that talks about informed consent is legally useless. It does not provide any additional protection. It only seems to. This section's only purpose for being included in this law is deception and nothing more. So why on earth would a law be written with such deception? Oh, the powers that be play upon public ignorance by inducing people into having a false sense of security. As a result, the public believes that this activity could not be occurring because they believe that they would have personally heard about it. This false belief then provides insurance that this law will never be contested in court. And as long as this law remains uncontested, chemtrail spraying will continue unhindered. The final result is that this craftily written law has done its job. It has enabled chemtrail spraying to continue without being contested in court. And this law continually provides legal protection for those doing the spraying. After all, by your and my inaction, we have given them our permission. When you consider the incredibly dark nature of this deception, and when you consider the fact that the law gives your public servants the self-appointed power to kill you, you should then consider what kind of people are running your country, or the world for that matter. You know it. We're living in a monumental time. Corruption, scandals, and disinformation are at an all-time high. Mainstream media is a gallant waste of time. And while I'm on my soapbox, I'm going to draw a connection to another health hazard that I fuss about all the time, and that is the extreme health dangers due to cell phones, cell towers, smart meters, cordless phones. And here's one of my concerns when it comes to chemtrails and wireless technology. It is a fact, a scientifically proven fact. I've interviewed the scientists, read the papers, studied the studies that prove that a mere few minutes with an ear to a cell phone causes breaks and openings of the blood-brain barrier. That is, the membrane that surrounds our brain to keep it safe. So now we have openings in this membrane, allowing the toxins and chemicals that overload our bodies to enter our brain, breathe in the residue from chemtrail fallout, and does it leak into our brains? Our brains now riddled with openings from the microwave radiation given off by our cell phones? And people wonder why Alzheimer's and autism and ADHD are on the rise. Throw in some vaccines, fluoridate the water, eat some genetically modified foods, and on and on and on. And I'm not just surmising this, it's out there. For example, a Swedish study claims that the microwave radiation from cell phones can open the safety barrier that is supposed to protect the brain from being invaded by poisonous substances contained in our blood. A research team at Lund University has found that the protein albumin leaks through the blood-brain barrier into the brain of rats that have been exposed to microwaves similar to those irradiated by a mobile phone. Albumin is naturally contained in blood, but it can harm the brain. In fact, experiments where albumin has deliberately been injected into rat brains have shown that very small amounts can harm the brain cells. Amounts not much greater than the ones we have found can kill nerve cells. And the blood-brain barriers of humans and rats are similar in function. And since albumin can get into the brain, there is reason to believe that other, smaller or equal-sized molecules can too. Proteins found in the blood can, if they get to the brain, cause autoimmune diseases such as MS, multiple sclerosis. Damaged nerve cells could also lead to dementia, premature aging, and Parkinson's disease. Inflamed brain cells can indirectly be linked to Alzheimer's disease. Medication that under normal circumstances wouldn't be able to penetrate the blood-brain barrier could do so and cause damage. This is also addressed in Section 10 of the Bioinitiative Report, Effects of Electromagnetic Fields from Wireless Communication Upon the Blood-Brain Barrier. And in an article, Chemtrails, Wireless, and You, William Thomas writes, just 2 minutes on a cell phone, or sitting near a wireless computer router, or portable phone cradle, short-circuits the electrical ion activity powering the blood-brain barrier. This allows proteins and other blood toxins to enter the brain and resume damaging neurons in thinking and memory centers. Researchers are finding astonishing numbers of dead neuron cells actually suffering holes in their brains from the damage caused by a single cell phone call. Think you might want to put down that phone? Think you might want to put down that phone and look up? How interesting that the phone is such a perfect little device of delusion and distraction. Can't look up if you're looking down. Back to my friend, Russ Tanner. He says, if you don't face these difficult choices now by choice, you will eventually face them by necessity. But by that time, your food, your health, and all your rights will be gone as well. To remain silent or passive or willfully ignorant is to choose to endorse the largest and most lethal crime against humanity in human history. There is simply no other way to say this and be honest. Please get involved today. And I leave you with that. Coming up, a short interview with a guest from the Alzheimer's Association with some startling news, a request for more funding, and yet, no substantive research into the potential causes that I believe will soon prove to be one of the keys behind the current increase in diagnosis, wireless, and chemtrails. Stay in your seat.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi there, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, the voice of Mrs. Green on the airwaves. Mrs. Green's World is a global movement of ideas and actions made up of people who care about their own health and the health of this planet. If you're interested in things like clean water, clean air, clean oceans, or would like to know more about just what it means to live a sustainable life, you will love to hear what our guests from all over the world have to say. Please visit our website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and to become a part of our world.
Are you in the market to purchase a home? Are you thinking of selling yours? Well, I've personally worked with the McCaskey team. They're conveniently located on Chardon Square. Give them a call, 440-773-5542. 440-773-5542. Ask for my friends Dan or Terry, or visit their website, McCaskeyTeam.com. That's McCaskeyTeam.com. McCaskeyTeam.com. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always bringing you breaking news when it comes to keeping you safe from healthcare and hospital hazards. And today I have some disturbing news from a new report from the Alzheimer's Association's Facts and Figures that reveals that only 45% of people with Alzheimer's reported being told their diagnosis, compared to over 90% of those diagnosed with the four most common cancers, and how this delay is clearly detrimental to a patient's health and outcome. And to help us explain this a bit further, we are fortunate to have Beth Kallmeyer with us today. She is the Vice President of Constituent Services for the Alzheimer's Association. So I welcome you to the show, Beth.
Thank you for having us, Pat.
The Alzheimer's Association's Facts and Figures highlights that low disclosure rates for Alzheimer's are reminiscent of the disclosure rates for cancer in the 50s and 60s, when doctors thought that there were no effective treatments and the mention of the word cancer was taboo. And so what I'd like to know, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know, is why are we still stuck in that kind of secrecy?
You know, it's a great question, and that's part of the reason that the Alzheimer's Association did this report, because we'd like to know the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is unacceptable to think that a doctor would not tell you today if you went in with symptoms that you had a diagnosis of cancer. So why is it okay if they're not telling you that you have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's? Is that if people know about this disease, if they educate themselves, if they get support, they can impact their everyday quality of life. This disease goes on for a long period of time. It's complicated. It's distressing. And if they don't know they have the disease, they can't access it.
Absolutely. As I was giving this some thought, one of the things I came up with was perhaps that a doctor simply cannot determine this kind of a diagnosis in that typical 10-minute appointment. I wouldn't imagine.
Time constraints is one of the reasons, among many, that the medical literature talks about why doctors don't give this diagnosis, because they admit it. Doctors say they don't always give this diagnosis. We also think that the Alzheimer's Association thinks that it's essential that medical students and doctors are provided with education and resources so they can give this diagnosis.
Yeah, we try to be proactive on this program. So let me ask you this question. What can a patient or especially a family member do if they suspect this kind of a diagnosis to encourage that communication with their provider?
I think that a family member, if they're concerned that they have Alzheimer's disease or they have some form of dementia and their doctor hasn't told them that, I would suggest that they talk to their doctor and say, ask if they've been evaluated for that. And sometimes I even suggest to patients that they ask the doctor, are you qualified to evaluate me for Alzheimer's disease, or should I see a specialist? You can refer me to someone else if that's not something that you feel comfortable doing. When patients are more apt to ask those questions and put all that forward, they're probably more likely to get a more direct response. And so the Alzheimer's Association is asking and urging the federal government to increase by $300 million the amount of money put into research for Alzheimer's disease in 2016.
Wow, that's a huge number. It's kind of frightening. And I think I also read on your website that women have the tendency to have Alzheimer's greater than men. Is that true?
That's correct. Two-thirds of the people with Alzheimer's disease are women.
So this is a very, very important topic. So where can we learn more, and when and where will we be able to read the full report?
The full report is currently available, and you can learn more about that, and as well as about the 10 signs of the disease and the caregiving information, all at the Alzheimer's Association website, which is located at alz.org.
Excellent, excellent. So for all of our listeners, it's clear that an earlier diagnosis can benefit patients and families so that they can begin to take steps while there is time. And preparation, as with anything else, is the key. So with that, I encourage everyone to visit the website www.alz.org, alz.org. Beth, what a pleasure to have you with us today, and I would love to talk with you further about this.
All right, great. I'd love to come back. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. So, there you have it. A sad commentary that 45% of Alzheimer patients are not told their diagnosis. A majority of them are women, and that the answer is to ask for $300 million in funding, when perhaps we may want to connect some dots. What is happening environmentally that may be contributing to the rise in not only Alzheimer's, but many other health-related issues? When half the population begins to show signs of Alzheimer's, perhaps in part due to the heavy metals from chemtrails leaking into our brains, thanks to the microwave radiation given off by wireless technology. And according to today's guest, our doctors don't share the diagnosis, but instead prescribe medications for perhaps other non-existent maladies. And that drug leaks into our brains, and another, again thanks to the radiation from cell phones. Can you fathom the profound effect this is going to have on the population? On you, me, and our loved ones? Our children, our grandchildren? Our pets? I really wish I were some kind of a kook, a nut job telling you foolish tales on the radio. But sadly, I'm not. All you have to do is put down the phone and look up. Look around. We are heading for a health crisis like the world has never seen. Please join me in paying attention. And come back next week for more. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice. Are you in the market to purchase a home? Are you thinking of selling yours? Well, I personally worked with the McCaskey team. They're conveniently located on Chardon Square. Give them a call, 440-773-5542. 440-773-5542. Ask for my friends, Dan or Terry, or visit their website, McCaskeyTeam.com. That's McCaskeyTeam.com. McCaskeyTeam.com.